Test, test. This is a continuation of an interview with Gordon and Carrie Rouse in their home in Miami, August 7th, 1985. So you were starting to tell me about how the song got popularized. You said that Billy Vaughn's orchestra...
Billy Vaughn's symphony orchestra.
Was the first to...
How
were you married at the time they wrote the song?
No. That was in 37. And I met him in 38, March of 38.
Uh-huh.
And then we were married in 39.
So the... And when did Billy Vaughn record it? Was that after you were married? Or?
Oh, yeah, quite a few years. Quite a few years. For a long time, it just, you know, the main thing, it was so hard to play that most fiddle players couldn't play it.
Whoops.
4 o'clock?
No, it just, when it gets to four, then it'll chime four. Along about the time that Billy Vaughn put it out, musicians were learning to read notes.
Uh-huh.
You know, the country, western, and such were learning to read music a little bit. So when they started to read music a little bit, then they, you know, started to be able to play it. Because they always said it was a very hard number to play.
Mm-hmm.
And really to play good, you know. A lot of them just... We hear it now. Well, you hear it out to the Bluegrass Festival. Shouldn't say this. I mean, you just hear it played. Sometimes I have to listen real good.
To recognize it?
To recognize it.
Right.
But it, they do the best they can. But
so they actually, before the big names began to record it, it was a number of years after the song was written.
Oh, yeah. It was quite a few.
Can you have a sense about how long it was before it...
I would say that it was maybe the early 60s when Billy Vaughn put it out.
But by that time it was quite well known already.
Yes, uh-huh. Different little groups, because see, they played anywhere from Florida to New York, you know.
Gordon and Irving did.
Gordon and Irving. And and his brother Earl settled in Richmond, Virginia. And he played it. Well, then he would show different ones how to play the Orange Blossom Special. So then, you know, different little groups. So it was known a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but not national like it was after Billy Vaughn. And then Lawrence Welk put it out. So then, and then Johnny Cash put it out. And then...
And that was what you were starting to...
See that stack of records?
Yes.
Albums? Every one of them has Orange Blossom Special.
I see. So, but he was starting to tell me earlier that Johnny Cash really didn't... He met them in the Orange Bowl and then invited them up?
Yeah, he had them to come up, you know, and recognized them.
Is that when he first started broadcasting the song? Or you said he himself had somebody record it on his... when you said Johnny Cash picked it up, what do you mean by that? Did he perform it?
He plays it. Now, if you ever see where Johnny Cash is playing, I mean, you know, he's going to be here, be sure and go see him.
Mm-hmm.
He does the Orange Blossom Special, and he has two or three numbers that he has made, like, home movie, you know, and it shows in back of, you know, back of the stage. Like his car that he stole the parts, you know, and built, you know, all together and got it all finished and everything. He's got movie of that, you know, putting the car together and then taking June and putting her in the car.
Mm-hmm.
That shows on the stage, you know, mm-hmm. while he's up there. Well, he has a movie. It's two trains. One of them is Orange Blossom Special, and the other one is another train, and they crash.
Oh, I see.
Now, several times I have gone, and I want to see this.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? Johnny always calls me and Gordon up on the stage. And we're up there. Gordon's playing the Orange Blossom Special with him. And what? I don't get to see this. And everybody says that it really that itself is worth going to see, the price of going to see Johnny Cash.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Is to see, you know, he plays Orange Blossom Special, and here to see this great train crash, you know.
Uh-huh.
And one of them is Orange Blossom Special. But I miss it, see, because
right.
I'm called up on the stage.
Right.
But it's all my friends that have been and seen it said it's really something to see.
Right. Well, how long, well, let me ask that next, but when... Was it in the 1960s or 69 when Johnny Cash came down here and he said met him at the Orange Bowl and then invited them up to play at the Grand Ole Opry?
It's been years back. Now, Gordon forgets things. When he invited them to come up to the Grand Ole Opry,
uh-huh.
that was not the year that they went up and taped the show with him.
I see.
Johnny had tried to get them to come up, you know, and appear with him on a program. At that time he had a program, you know, on one of the television stations
mm-hmm.
there, and he wanted them to be on that. But they didn't go. When they went up and taped the show with him, he didn't know how to get in touch with us, and he sent to Cracker Jim. He's a disc jockey and, you know, does shows. And he knew how to get in touch with him from him being a disc jockey. So he got in touch with him, and or the manager, you know, Johnny's manager. And they contracted Gordon and Irvin. He wanted Gordon and Irvin. Well, Irvin wanted the other brother, you know, to
mm-hmm.
go to. So they paid the expenses to Nashville and, you know, motel and everything like that. And they were paid a price each. And, but see, there's two different kinds of contracts we learned later.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a manager or anyone, you know, to check into. Well, one contract reads, you know, you're paid a certain amount, which has to be union. And the other contract reads that you're paid so and so much, and the show must be aired. That means that they can't put a commercial, they can't take it off, they have got to put it on the air, they've got to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Their contract didn't read that way. Their contract was just, you know, so much. So they put the Playtex girdle in the spot where they appeared on the tape with Johnny Cash.
You mean so they were never actually on...
We had friends tell us that they saw it in Oregon. And then we had some friends in Massachusetts tell us that they saw it. So you see, it may be, you know, like when they have a commercial, maybe it doesn't go all over,
uh-huh.
you know. They may see it in California or something. But down here, because I watched the taping, I went with them and I watched the taping. And I knew, now, after... the girl that did the Harper Valley PTA, what was, I can't remember her name.
I can't either, and I know who you mean.
Anyway, that I knew that they were to come on after she sang, then they were to come on. And after she sang, Playtex Girdle commercial came on, so I thought, well, they'll come on next. No, the next was, you know, I knew who they were, and I said, well, that's the spot.
Is that the only time that they played on the Grand Ole Opry?
Oh, no. They had played on the Grand Ole Opry before, but they played... Now, see, this wasn't the Grand Ole Opry. That was...
Oh, this was Johnny
that
Cash's...
That was his shows. They were taping.
I see.
But they were taping them at the Grand Ole Opry.
I see.
You know, house. But then while we were there, they played on the Grand Ole Opry, and they were paid. That's what he's talking about, that they don't pay much.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the union scale.
Is that the first time? Have they played at the Grand Ole Opry many times?
Yeah, but way years back.
Uh-huh.
But they only played one number. Just one number.
The Orange Blossom Special?
Orange Blossom Special. But on Johnny Cash's show, they taped the Orange Blossom Special and the Mockingbird. Because Irvin did such a job on playing Mockingbird, He made the birds sound so natural that you'd want to look up in a tree or something to see where the birds were. Honestly, it just, you know, was remarkable. But the Orange Blossom Special was what they were going to show. That's what they decided.
Now, how long has Miami been your home?
My home?
Well, I don't know. When he was down here, he was just appearing in theaters. He wasn't living here, is that right?
Well, until years after we were married, they went back and forth. You know, they were here in the wintertime. And then up north in the summertime.
And you were living up north, or did you come down with them for the
season?
Well,
they met me here.
Uh-huh.
Because I was raised here.
Oh, you were?
I was raised here, and he met me here. And, we traveled for quite a few years after we were married. And Irvin, him and his wife, began to have a family. And that's when they more or less settled here. Because
when was that?
Their first child was born in San Antonio, Texas in 1941. And we traveled, I guess, about 2 years. I think it was about 1944 that we just settled here.
Just settled here.
Yeah.
But you had been down here playing before that for some years.
Yeah. They would go north, you know, the booking agents would book them, say maybe they wanted them a week, you know, in New York, or a week in Washington or something like that. Well, then they would just go, you know, and me and my sister-in-law, we didn't go, we just stayed here. And sometimes they'd be booked in Mobile, Alabama, or, you know, someplace in Tennessee or something. But it would be a week or maybe 2 weeks, something like that. Well, then they just went and we stayed here. And then they'd come back. But basically, I'll say from 1944, they settled here.
And then they continued to play the hotels and the clubs?
And they'd go to Key West, Naples, Tampa, you know, places like that for Orlando, Jacksonville, you know, maybe go be booked for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know? Well, they just get in the car and go, you know, they'd get a hotel room or something, you know. And we stayed here. Now, one time they were booked in Key West. We stayed down there about 3 months. Well, we went down there with them then. We got an apartment and stayed down there. But after that, they didn't. Well, if you have to pay so much for rent, you know, and so much things are so much higher, and you're maintaining another place, you know, if you don't make a lot of money, it doesn't pay you to, you know, to go. So they finally just would go down. If they would have like a 3 or 4 day booking, they would go, but they wouldn't go to stay long enough for us to go down.
Now, I imagine the audiences that would have heard him play in the 40s. I mean, the population was very different down here then than it is now, right?
Yes. It's changed so much. It's not Miami like I know.
Well, how would you characterize the audiences that would come and hear them play? Would it be a lot of tourists, or would there be like a group of local people, or
all kinds? I mean, the tourist was really wild about them, because they were booked in the Village Barn in New York for a 2 week engagement. You know how long they stayed there? 2 months. The owner of the Village Barn, Meyer Horowitz, he was so wild about them. He stopped everything when they came on the show. He stopped everything. His waiters and everybody knew that when the Rouse Brothers came on, don't bother him. He thoroughly enjoyed it. And he would have me to sit at the table with him. And of course, I was young, and I guess you'd call dumb, because I didn't realize it. But he just loved to hear me talk. He said that, well, I guess I did have a real Southern accent then. I've traveled and, you know, it's changed some. But he'd have his friends come and he'd say, say something for them. Now, what do you want me to say? Anything.
Oh, it was because of your accent.
He just loved to hear me talk.
Uh-huh.
And,
Was there any place that they played regularly here in Miami, or was it just a bunch of different...
Yeah, it would mostly be, you know, like they'd be booked at the Mama Biltmore Theater, or... Now, the Olympia, you wouldn't remember where that's at, but that's the Gusman...
Oh, right, right. The Gusman's Theater, center for...
Yeah, well, they used to have floor shows there.
Uh-huh.
They had them in the daytime, you know, they'd show the movie, and in between when the movie was on, they had a stage show, and they would play there.
Mm-hmm.
What was so convenient for them, I mean, for the different places, the theaters and the nightclubs and all, like one time they played the Olympia, they had a dance act booked there. And the girl got appendicitis, had to be rushed to the hospital on Sunday night,
mm-hmm.
and operated on. Well, of course, you know, that threw that act out. Well, they needed somebody to fill that spot. Well, another dance act, or a girl singer, or a man singer, or whatever, you know, you got to rehearse with the orchestra. Them, all they used for coming on the stage when they did stage shows, their same theme song was Coming Around the Mountain. Well, all the orchestra had to do was just play a few bars of Coming Around the Mountain. And then they introduce and have the Rouse Brothers come on.
Whose theme song? Their song was Coming Around the Mountain.
That was for the stage.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were on a stage show. So the Olympia Theater, they'd call them. And they'd come, well, there's nothing to it. They orchestra knew, play Coming Around the Mountain, a few mm-hmm. bars of that. Mm-hmm. And then they come on. If they were broadcasting, they used Alabama Jubilee. That was a theme song for radio.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing there. Of course, you have to be at the radio station an hour before broadcast time. Now, I would imagine that they got some tape or something else that they would use. But back then, they had to have something, you know, to fill that spot.
Mm-hmm.
So they have an hour, you know, to do it in. So what? They call the Rouse Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get over here and such and such? They get over there. Well, they go on.
Now, when they would perform on their, in these variety shows or in the theaters, did they just do their music, or were they, you know, sort of telling jokes, how would their act go?
They had, you would call it a musical comedy act. Now, he would look, honestly, when he was on the stage, he just looked like the dumbest thing you've ever seen. I mean, it's, Gordon, give her your dumb look.
Huh?
Give her your dumb stage look.
Give him a what?
Your dumb stage look. You know, when you was on the stage.
I see.
Well, he just he had several different expressions. But it Irvin used to those waves in his hair. Of course, his hair was gold color then. But Irvin would take his fiddle bow, you know, he'd make a sound, you know, on the fiddle,
uh-huh.
and clunk him on the head.
I see.
And Gordon would say, don't do that now. And he'd say, well, how'd you get them waves anyway? And he'd say, Papa put them there with a pitchfork. You know that. You know, just uh-huh. different things, you know. It was stuff that they just came up with. Their, you know, nobody made their jokes up for them
uh-huh.
or anything. Their comedy, it just, you know, came natural. They wore overalls, some kind of a plaid-like shirt, and, you know, one of those railroad handkerchiefs.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Gordon would wear. Irvin would wear overalls and a long-tail tuxedo coat.
Uh-huh.
And just a regular tie, you know, with his shirt. And it just... Now, this is when they... This is the papers he's talking about. And this is the Grand Ole Opera. the night they played the Grand Ole Opry. And here's what he's talking about, that he was paid. There's a check stub.
For $12? That's gross.
Yeah.
Minus taxes, of course. $9.32. Wow. So he wrote, you have this pile of songs here that they wrote, but his name wasn't on any of them.
No, no.
Was that an agreement between the brothers, or how did that happen?
They always, everything that they had, it was equal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just equaled up. And they just always thought that everything, you know, would be, he thought, well, we're just always going to play music together.
So,
and we're always going to divide up, you know. And
so they divided the profits. It was just that Irvin's name was on everything and not...
No, he's never gotten the profits.
No.
Mm-mm. Of course, it was years and years, you know, before any money came in.
Uh-huh.
It was only until it, you know, really was recorded and all that, you know, that money started coming from it.
Right.
But they always, now this is, well, you can look at this when you finish there.
But all these songs that, like the Silver Meteor and those sorts of the Loan Me a Buck and We'll Start Love All Over Again, all these ones that have Irvin's name on them, are these all songs that they wrote together?
Yeah, they wrote together. The Sweeter Than the Flowers, they wrote after their mother died. But they had the music for several years. In fact, Mrs. Rice had played that music. You know, just the music.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or another, they would get music a long time before they would, think of words to go with something or get an inspiration, you know, to write something.
So it was easier for them to make up tunes than for words.
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell me about...
If you had some words to something and you'd say, you read them off, you know, to him, and he'll come up with a tune.
Uh-huh.
He'll come up with a tune to go with it.
Well, tell me a bit more about all the hotels and clubs here in Miami. That whole era has sort of passed away.
Oh, yeah.
When did that start to change?
I guess the Miami Biltmore was about the first one to change when they changed and made that into the VA hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tore down the Rony Plaza. Royal Palm Club.
Mm-hmm.
That was downtown. Let me see what. You know where the DuPont Plaza Hotel is?
Okay.
Okay, right that way, where it's, you know, park. I think it's parking lot.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it's right there on that corner, you know. That's where this exclusive club. You had to be really... You know, you couldn't just walk in there with slacks. He couldn't walk in there dressed like he's dressed. He'd have to have a coat on.
I see.
You know, just anything couldn't walk in there.
Well,
and they had floor show.
But those clubs must have changed or been torn down because the interest, they stopped making money? Or?
Well, I don't know whether it was that or whether it was the need. They really need parking area downtown, you know. And this was not a huge club.
But they don't have big, they're not doing the same sort of thing now here in Miami that they did.
No.
I mean,
no.
Not with country musicians.
I don't know many places. I don't know of any place that has stage shows.
Uh-huh.
Really.
I guess they have them in the condominiums and in some places.
And there was a theater on 7th Avenue. About 28th Street, it was called The Strand, and they had a stage show, but it was only on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So when did they stop really playing in a lot of these stage shows? About how long ago have been?
They broke up.
The group?
Yeah, Irvin broke up.
When was that?
That was, I would say, in the early 60s that they broke up. And
did they keep performing separately, or did they stop performing then?
Well, they did for a while. They did for a while. Irving played with Tex Dean and his outfit, and then with several other outfits. And Gordon, it was he and I and a fiddle player, Otis Sharp, and we played together.
But oh, then, so you were in a group with him. Did you have a name?
Just Carrie Lou.
Carrie Lou.
Which is my name, but we never use the last name. We just always, you know, it was Carrie Lou.
Uh-huh.
Gordon, when we were working, he called Gordon Rouse and the Everglades Ramblers.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Irvin, when he was working with these others, well, he just went under the group, you know, they already had a name, so... He just was a fiddle player with that outfit.
Uh-huh. Would you still be playing in these big hotels at that time, or had that sort of...
No, that had kind of the hotels and all the stage shows and all. I don't know for what reason that things changed like that, but it just, all of a sudden, the Strand, I think, stopped first, and there was a theater in Little River called the Rex Theater. They had stage shows there.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
These smaller theaters just had it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But they began to, this one and that one and the other one, you know, to stop having it. But the Olympia still went on for a long time until it was changed to the Guzman Hall.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I guess, probably television, maybe. When television got here,
mm-hmm.
that probably was what changed all of it. Because
mm-hmm.
everybody, you know, just, you know, why go to the show when you can see something on television?
Right, right.
And I would imagine that's what changed it. I can't think of anything else. But it, there was so many. And hotels, well, the big hotels, the Columbia Hotel downtown, I mean, the big hotels, well, they just had music. They had a floor show. And the dinner hour, or supper hour, whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they call it cocktail hour. But then sometimes they'd go and play, they had at Verdine's a fashion show. Well, that would be along from about 1 o'clock till 3. And sometimes they would have them come and play there, you know,
mm-hmm.
just in between, you know, because I guess they'd have to have time for the models, you know, to change or something, and they'd maybe come on. See, they never played more than 3 or 4 numbers. That
mm-hmm.
was a show.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd have these 1 or 2 jokes, you know, in between, or and they had another one, one of them, I don't remember, would say, oh, I think it was Irvin. He'd say, hey, Gordon, did you know it's all off? Well, what's all off? But he'd look so dumb-like, you know. What?
Mm-hmm.
It's all off. What's all off? The hair on that man's head. And sometimes they'd, if a lady or somebody get up and, you know, gonna walk out. I don't know where you're going. Mention my name, you'll get a good seat. That was just some of the things
uh-huh.
that, in between, you know,
right.
singing, that they would just stop, you know,
uh-huh.
just like if it's dead serious, you know, or important, and say this,
mm-hmm.
you know, just out of a blue sky like that.
Mm-hmm.
They were really, and just, oh... You talk about Elvis Presley and all them getting the girls just swooning in there. They used to do that with him. I used to get furious.
That's
about
why you had to go to the shows, huh? To keep him honest, huh?
Oh, I'm telling you, I'd be so mad sometimes. Yeah, the girls would scream and holler. Oh, just something. Especially up, I think it was up around Indiana. Oh, I forget now how many towns they played in Indiana. And they would scream and squeal and all. But everywhere they went and played, they
mm-hmm.
always went over real good. Real good. And they, well, they were, it's, The only thing I can say is like they were a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe shouldn't say that now, the way things are different. But it's like I can almost know, you know, what he's going to do and vice versa and all. Well, they had been together so long playing music that they just almost knew one another.
Mm-hmm.
Knew what to do or say or something, you know, to put on a show.
Mm-hmm.
This is this was on the front page. Now this gives us the date. The Johnny Cash show.
1969.
Yeah.
The Johnny Cash show.
This was when he was taping the TV show.
I see.
See, this is different write-ups, but they were on the front page of both papers in Nashville. These were all, that's the other paper there.
I see.